Hello, this is Carl Sabatino, and we are back, and this is Smith Sabatino on America Weekend on the Envision Radio Network. Roland, please.
Well, we have a wonderful guest here today. His name is Chris Austin Hadfield. He is a retired Canadian astronaut who was the first Canadian to walk in space, Carl. He's an engineer, a former Royal Canadian Air Force fighter pilot. He had flown in two space shuttle missions and served as commander of the International Space Station. So let me be the first to say, Mr. Commander Hadfield, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, both Rowan and Carl, thank you very much. It's nice to talk to you both.
It seems to me that the first question that everybody asks you is, what was it like in space? But, you know, I will get to that. But what I want to know is, what was it like preparing to go into space when you had no experience of it?
Fundamentally, it's a life's work in that the decision to become an astronaut is not one taken lightly nor hurriedly. And I decided to be an astronaut when I was quite young, when I was 9, almost 10. And so I had been sort of, when you say launch where you have no experience at it, I'd been trying to simulate and gain and prepare and do all the things I thought made sense so that I would have as much anticipatory experience as I could. And when those things you listed right at the outset, Roland, like being a fighter pilot and being a test pilot, studying engineering at school, learning to scuba dive, doing all those different things, they were steps on the way to being ready to fly in space and really just to even get selected as an astronaut. And then once the space agency selects you, then they really work hard to get you prepared. The simulators are as realistic as we can make them. The detail of technical preparation is staggering. Nobody has any idea the lengths with which we go to try and make sure we're ready for it. So when you actually come to that day, finally, where you're laying on your back on the launch pad, it feels familiar. You don't feel overwhelmed by it. You feel infinitely ready for it. You're really excited, of course, and the reality of it is going to be different. But you don't feel fear. Instead, you feel just sort of an intense awareness and level of preparation like you've never had before in your life.
Most people don't really realize all of that kind of preparation that you have to go through. And once you get into space, that first view that you ever had, was there anything that surprised you more than the anticipation of what you might see?
One thing, I was worried, what if I didn't like it? Imagine that. If after, 26 years of getting ready, if you get there and you find out, it's sort of like maybe if you've been anticipating drinking wine for a long time, and then you take your first sip of wine, and you go, geez, I don't even like wine. But it was one of those things that, looking back at it, even while it was happening real time, it's better than I dreamed it would be. And part of it is just that overcoming the complexity. There's a great sense of pride and feeling of accomplishment in doing something really hard and doing it well, like an exam where you get 100% on the really complicated questions because you prepared for it. There's a great an inertia feeling within you of being able to do something like that. The other is, as you say, as soon as you finish launch and you get to space, you're weightless, which is just flat magic. You can fly, you can tumble, you can float, you have like a superpower. But the third part is the one you asked about, and that is looking out the window. And the world, the surprising part of it is not so much just seeing how the world is shaped, because we've all looked at maps and globes and such. The surprising part is how the raw beauty of it, the unquestioning, constantly changing, visually powerful beauty of it. It's thought stopping. I was amazed. It's like seeing the most gorgeous sunset. You catch that flash of a sunset where the light of the sun is streaming through, and there's it looks like some enormous gorgeous oil painting for a few seconds. or a big swelling piece of symphonic music that just kind of captures your whole existence. Hmm. It's like that all the time.
Do you ever?
So it's an amazing place to be, and the speed, the way you travel over the world at 5 miles a second, the view is constantly changing and being refreshed. It's an amazing place to be.
Just listening to you, we can hear the excitement in your voice, Chris. But do you ever get the feeling as you, I remember speaking to a class some many years ago, young kids, when they were quoting Peter Pan and the phrase, first star to the right and straight ahead till morning. Do you ever get that feeling that you can just turn this craft around and just head out to the great beyond, wherever that would take you? I wonder what that feels like.
Yeah. Well, in fact, once you're going the speed you need to be going to stay in orbit, which is about 5 miles a second, you only have to go 40% faster. You only have to go like eight miles a second, and you can leave Earth forever. You know, you're most of the way there. So there is that bit of Peter Pan feeling.
That must be very exciting.
Yeah, and we'll do it. You know, a few people have done it as far as the moon in our early space probing phase, but we left Earth permanently 14 years ago. We started as a species living off the planet, living on the space station back in November of 2000. And so we're just like our permanent beachhead up there, and it won't be that long, especially if you look at the span of history, before we do turn the nose of the spaceship away from the Earth and fire the engines for that remaining couple of minutes and go further.
You know, there are a number of people all over saying that the United States doesn't have the capability anymore of being in space, but I heard a recent interview that you gave. You're basically saying that that's just not true.
It's not true at all. It's just people confuse the end of the space shuttle with the end of space exploration. And the space shuttle was just one of many vehicles. It was an incredible one, and I flew it twice. It was the most capable flying machine ever built, but it was also incredibly complex and with a great level of cost and danger as well. And we lost two space shuttles and killed two crews in the process of flying it. And it flew for 30 years. You know, there's not too many 30-year-old cars still on the highways, and is an old design. So NASA made, I think, what was absolutely the right decision back in 2004 to end the space shuttle, especially in the wake of the Columbia accident. And we took about 7 years to wind it down, finish building the space station, didn't hurt one more person, and then retired the space shuttle. Unfortunately, we didn't have a vehicle to immediately step into, and we've been building vehicles since. And the first one launches in December. Which is, less than a month away. And then Boeing and SpaceX both have contracts to build vehicles that can take astronauts to the space station and back. So we're, but meanwhile, we've put rovers on Mars, and we have a sensor that's flying around Mercury. We have a vehicle on its way out to Pluto and Charon, and there's incredible stuff. And the part that I guess people should focus on most is Americans have been living permanently in space since November of 2000. That has never happened before in history. We have never had as big a presence in space as we have for the last decade. So it's kind of funny when people confuse stopping flying the shuttle with the end of the whole thing. It's mostly just a perception thing.
Was there a major disappointment with the recent crash of the experimental rocket ship that may eventually replace the shuttle?
Well, anything that we get wrong, we feel badly about. Often we get it wrong, but we don't pay a huge price for it. You know, you can come close to the edge, but you don't fail. But of course, in any big, new, complicated venture, once in a while, you get it wrong. And it's true in designing cars, in the early design of airplanes, design of any, washing machines. The early designs didn't all get it right. And unfortunately, when ours fail, they fail so dramatically and publicly. And within the last little while, we had an unmanned ship, the Antares rocket with Orbital, launching out of Wallops in Virginia that failed. It had an engine failure, looks like, of some sort. And then shortly thereafter, Richard Branson's company, Virgin Galactic and Scaled Composites, they had a vehicle come apart that killed the test pilot on board and wounded badly the other test pilot. But I was a test pilot before I became an astronaut. And when you are trying to, you know, people talk about the edge of the envelope. That edge got defined by someone, and someone risked their life to define where the edge of the envelope for that airplane is. And if you want to push the edge of that envelope back further, someone has to take a risk. That's how it happens. That's how it's always happened.
And that's how you learn, is it not?
We try not to make a mistake, but sometimes we do. And unfortunately, as test pilots lose their lives once in a while.
Well, yes, that is always unfortunate, and we thank all of those who have given their lives in the pursuit of both elegance as well as technology. If you would stand by just for a few minutes, Commander, we will continue this for another 6 or 7 minutes. So please stand by.
My pleasure.
This is Carl Sabatino with Roland Smith. This is Smith Sabatino. Stay with us.
America, we can. Big Success in a Minute with George and Mary Lynn.
Who likes to negotiate? Not most people. It's stressful.
Joel Peterson, past CEO of Trammell Crow, the world's largest private real estate developer, says successful negotiations are about win-win.
I've negotiated billions of dollars worth of transactions over 30-some years. I try to get to the point where I understand what the other party wants and am able to say it to them in a way that they relax. And they say, this guy, he's able to say better than I am what I want. That's a very disarming position. So if you're getting bowled over by somebody, you're feeling crushed, it's because you have not done your homework. You've allowed them to do that.
Get what you want and help people get what they want.
Do your homework for big success.
Find big success at BIGGSuccess.com.
The Movie Man 6 Second Review starts now.
A killer thriller about the news and its thirst for blood. It's Nightcrawler's Jake Gyllenhaal that'll have you hooked. The Mink.
On November 14th, the wait is over. Frank and Lloyd are back and dumber than ever. Dumb and Dumber 2. Rated PG-13.
Think green.
Harrison with you. The Harvard Business Review reports three college frisbee buddies from Notre Dame turned their used textbook resale website into a $21 million company with 200 employees. Why is it green? Well, every year, libraries get rid of thousands of books to make room for the next cycle. By partnering with more than 1,600 college campuses and 1,000 libraries, Better World Books has donated some $5.5 million to literacy and education causes now, along with diverting thousands of books from permanent landfills, while additionally purchasing 2,400 tons of carbon offsets to cover the transportation of tons of textbooks. This is now known as the triple bottom line, boosting people, planet, and profits all at the same time. Green entrepreneurs creating a brilliant solution.
Think Green with Harrison at thinkgreenradio.com.